African-American neighborhoods bloomed across the Ozarks in the late 1800s, with thousands of blacks building homes, businesses, schools, and churches in places like Fayetteville, Bentonville, Eureka Springs, and Harrison. But those neighborhoods would soon wither under Jim Crow and sanctioned lynchings. In Harrison, angry white residents expelled nearly 100 of their African-American neighbors in 1905 after a black man robbed a white home. 4 years later, those who remained were driven out after 18-year-old Charles Hill Stinnett, charged with criminal assault of a 58-year-old white widow, was hanged. Harrison's black district was, through adverse possession, absorbed, and the entire matter buried for nearly a century. Yet a stigma remained, later attracting members of the Klan, Christian Identity, and hate-monger Gerald L. K. Smith, who built his then anti-Semitic Great Passion Play in nearby Eureka Springs. Blacks have for decades avoided driving through Harrison because of this. It was only after our account of racial violence was published in 1999 that townspeople began to reckon with their legacy. Emotions finally broke loose on Halloween night 2002 when some black basketball players from Fayetteville were harassed by local white boys wearing sheets. George Holcomb, a Harrison Daily Times reporter, wrote about the incident, creating a firestorm of opinion. On the one side was a newly formed task force led by a coalition of Harrison church leaders calling for public reconciliation. On the other, racists who leafleted the town wrote angry letters to the newspaper and spewed at public meetings. Still, May 1st, 2003, on the National Day of Prayer, many townspeople knelt on the town square to pray and apologize for committing violent acts of racism 100 years ago. 800 residents signed documents filed at City Hall, personally affirming and welcoming people of all races to Harrison. Today, Harrison is increasingly diverse, in part because of the Harrison Community Task Force on Race Relations, now 10 years old. It's hosted a major exhibit this spring at the public library, facilitates diversity trainings, established a local community college scholarship for minority students, sponsors a high school diversity program, and struck a sister relationship with an African Methodist Episcopal church in Helena. A railroad once linked the towns, all out of their own pockets. Patty Methvin, president and CEO of Harrison's Chamber of Commerce, is an original member of the task force, determined to rebrand Harrison, Methvin says.
Well, over the years, we have taken every opportunity possible to get our message out that Harrison is a wonderful community and a safe community to all people.
Businesses with multicultural staff have set up operations in town.
We've just recently had 6 or 7 major conferences come to town, and they're statewide organizations like the county treasurers, the county clerks, the circuit clerks, and the Arkansas Master Gardeners. And we've had nothing but wonderful responses to people of all ethnicities that have come here. And so having people come visit our community and seeing exactly what it's like has done wonders for our reputation.
And word about the task force has spread around the state. Patty Methvin and 2 other members were invited this past spring to the Clinton School of Public Service for a Pathways to Racial Healing conference attended by many African Americans.
And so it was an exceptional opportunity for us to be able to talk about Harrison. Most of the people who had been to Harrison had not had a problem, but were still a little worried about being here. And so it was a good chance for them to visit one-on-one with somebody from the community, and that's been my experience.
Lane Ragsdale was president of the town chamber when the task force first organized, serving as facilitator. She's now a financial advisor. She says the task force has also taken on the responsibility of quelling rumors, which continue to plague the town.
Until we had the opportunity to go to the Clinton School and talk to those people, I don't think I realized how important that discussion was for our community. We've kept that discussion alive. When there is a concern in the community or somebody hears something bad in a media release or in something on a blog, they'll contact us now. They have a place to go and talk about those concerns. We still meet monthly, and we start our meetings with the idea that we have what we call a decompressing time to talk about the stories and the things you hear, good or bad.
Ragsdale said the task force communicate with the media, conduct educational programming, and host public events. But most important, she said, they reach out to Arkansas African Americans.
When we started, we didn't know how to do that with a very small community here in our area. We weren't able to know how to start the efforts toward reconciliation because who did we go talk to? And so we decided that we wanted to very carefully reach out, find advocates throughout the Black community that could help us with that, that we could use as a sounding board, that we could use for advice, that we could just call when we have questions. We want to thoughtfully move forward, being careful not to offend, but being sure that we reach out and have good advice from the African American community for our efforts.
According to the 2010 census, around 13,000 people reside in Harrison. Among them, 34 African Americans, 95 Asians, and 286 Hispanics. Since 2000, the Black population has tripled, the Hispanic and Asian populations doubled. And while these residents are free to live wherever they wish, early 20th century Blacks remained mainly sequestered. Carolyn Klein is a retired federal employee, seventh-generation Boone County resident, amateur genealogist, and task force member. After cross-checking property and census records, she mapped the original Black neighborhood, now published in a self-guided walking tour brochure.
The historical Black district was basically off on the east side of town, along Crooked Creek, which is where poor people have lived since time immemorial, not the more expensive part of town. And we're talking about a time period 100 years ago, barely 40 years out of slavery. And many of the Black residents who lived in the area worked in hard jobs day to day. As an example, there were a number of the men listed in the federal censuses who worked day labor. And what that meant was they didn't work for anyone full time. They might work for one person one day and another the next. Many of the women were shown as cooks or maids. There were some notable exceptions to that, and those included Thomas Horton, who was Aunt Vine's son, who was a blacksmith.
Aunt Vine, Electa Caledonia Malvina Smith, was the only Black resident to remain in Harrison after the riots, protected by a white family.
This is purely speculative on my part. You know, we seem to remember the great things that happened to us, you know, with such fervor and intensity, and won't let them go a bit. But let something happen that upon reflection doesn't reflect well on us. And I think we as a human race give it every opportunity to just disappear.
Dozens of Black families had permanently settled in Harrison before the turn of the 20th century, even building their own church.
The Union African Methodist Episcopal Church. And what has been especially interesting is looking at federal census records that have spanned a period of time. In the first censuses that can be seen with the Black American population here, many of the children and many of the adults can neither read nor write. But by the time that you go 20 years, you begin to see that everyone can read and write. And those individuals can do that because of the schooling that they had in the Union African American Episcopal Church.
And it's possible young Charlie Stinnett attended that church and school when visiting family in Harrison. In the end, Carolyn Klein said, he was executed without a fair trial.
The reason that he would not have had a fair trial is from the date that he was arrested until the date that he was found guilty, only 4 days lapsed. And in today's context, that would be unacceptable because a defense lawyer would not have had time to prepare.
The hanged body of Charles Stinnett, according to newspaper accounts, was hastily crammed into a small pine coffin, breaking bones and drawing blood in the process, then shipped via railroad to Muskogee, Oklahoma, to where his family waited. Reportedly horrified, they quickly buried him in the local black cemetery.
Charlie Stinnett is my first cousin twice removed. He was my grandfather's first cousin.
Joyce Coker, a retired telecom worker who lives in Orange, New Jersey, is one of the first descendants of Harrison's historic black community to come forward. She found roots in Harrison, Yaleville, Muskogee, and Joplin while doing genealogical research on a missing family branch, among them the Stinnetts.
I found a small article about a Charlie Stinnett being hanged in Harrison in 1909. I wondered if this was my Charlie. So I kept researching, and I found other articles that mentioned his parents, who were Tom and Letty Stinnett.
She also came across the Harrison Race Riot history, where she read about the failed efforts by the Stinnett family to commute Charlie's sentence. And she's the one who uncovered the news accounts of his grisly internment.
You know, I thought about how his mother must have felt. You know, she spent a lot of time and effort trying to get his execution changed to a life sentence. I understand that she had some of the jurors sign letters to the governor at the time, Governor Donaghy. And my thoughts were how she must have felt as a mother and, you know, seeing her son brought to her that way.
Joyce Coker says she hopes to one day travel to the Ozarks to meet her long-lost family, pay her respects at her ancestors' graves, and if she can draw up the courage, visit Harrison. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.